Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the skillful art of manipulation. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present The Widow's Proxy, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Empty Coffin. The first rule of faking a death? Details matter. The second rule? Never trust a mortician who charges extra for discretion. I learned both the hard way. The morning of Michael's funeral, I stood in front of the bathroom mirror, painting my face with the kind of grief people expect from a widow. Pale foundation. Smudged eyeliner. Lips bitten raw instead of glossed. My hands trembled as I fastened the black lace veil over my hair, the fabric scratching my cheeks like a secret begging to be torn off. The funeral home had sent a car black, of course, and as I slid into the back seat, the driver muttered, "Condolences, ma'am," without making eye contact. I wondered if he knew, if the whole goddamn town knew. The chapel smelled like lilies and gilt. Rows of mahogany pews stretched toward the altar, where Michael's coffin gleamed under a spotlight. Closed casket. Obviously. Inside was a wax dummy with his face reconstructed from photos, a $15,000 puppet paid for in cash by a woman who'd spent 6 months learning how to lie without blinking. The funeral director, a sweaty weasel named Carl, had assured me it would hold up. Even his own mother wouldn't know, he'd said, counting the stacks of bills I'd dumped on his desk. His mother was dead. Just like him. Sort of. I took my seat in the front row, clutching a wadded tissue I'd never use. The organ groaned out a hymn that made my teeth ache. Behind me, muffled sobs and whispers swirled like smoke. Such a tragedy. Only 42, that poor woman. I bit the inside of my cheek until I tasted blood. Poor woman. They had no idea. 2 weeks earlier, I'd been in Carl's office, the air thick with formaldehyde and desperation. He'd leaned back in his leather chair, feet on the desk, grinning like a feral cat. "You sure about this, Mrs. Voss? Insurance fraud's a federal offense." "It's not fraud if they can't prove it," I'd snapped, sliding another envelope across the desk. "And it's Ms. Harper now. Remember?" He'd laughed, a wet, phlegmy sound. "Right, right. Fresh start. Just like your husband." The plan was simple: stage a car crash. Burn the vehicle. Plan enough dental records and DNA to convince the insurance vultures Michael was ash. Collect the $2 million payout. Disappear. But plans rot fast. The eulogy was delivered by Michael's frat brother, a bloated banker named Greg, who'd snorted half his 401k in Vegas. "Michael lived loud," he slurred into the mic, swaying. "Loved hard. And damn, could he party." A nervous titter rippled through the crowd. I stared at my hands, imagining the flames of his Porsche melting his Rolex, his golf clubs, the monogrammed cufflinks I'd bought him for our anniversary. The ones he'd been wearing the night he didn't come home. "Where were you?" I'd screamed that morning, his collar reeking of jasmine perfume. "Out," he'd said, loosening his tie. "Don't start, Evelyn." I'd started. He'd finished. With a backhand that split my lip. The coffin loomed, a polished black void. I stood abruptly, legs wobbling in my heels, and hurried to the bathroom. Locked myself in a stall, pressed my forehead to the cold metal door. Breathe. Just breathe. The insurance investigator had called twice already. "Routine questions," he'd said. "A formality. But formalities have teeth." When I returned, she was there. Lana, perched in the back pew like a vulture in a Valentino dress. Sunglasses hid her eyes, but I felt her stare, sharp, amused, hungry. She'd RSVP'd, of course. "Wouldn't miss it for the world," her text read. I'd crumpled the phone in my fist, picturing her fingers on Michael's skin, her laugh in his ear. "Our bed." Now she uncrossed her legs slowly, deliberately, as if daring me to scream. "To expose us both." I gripped the pew until my knuckles whitened. The priest droned on about God's plan. God's plan was a joke. Mine was better. After the burial, they came for me. A gauntlet of hollow hugs and, "Let us know if you need anything." I nodded, hollowed out, until my neck cramped. Mrs. Kowalski from next door pressed a casserole into my arms. "Turkey tetrazzini," she whispered. His favorite. Michael hated turkey. Carl materialized at my elbow, reeking of bourbon. Everything went smooth, he muttered, eyes darting. But we need to talk. The, other matter. Not here. Tonight. My office. He melted into the crowd. Across the grave, Lana lit a cigarette, the flame catching the afternoon sun. She blew smoke toward the coffin, a lazy salute, and walked away. The house felt too quiet. Too clean. Michael's absence was a presence clawing at the walls. I tore off the veil, poured vodka into a coffee mug, and stumbled into the backyard. His golf bag leaned against the patio furniture. I grabbed a 9-iron, swung it at a potted fern. Dirt exploded. Shattered ceramic. Better. In the garage, I dragged his suits from the closet, Armani, Tom Ford, all bought with my inheritance. Doused them in lighter fluid. Striked a match. Watched the fabric writhe and blacken. Burn, you bastard. My phone buzzed. An Instagram DM from at Gravedigger Barbie. The profile pic was Lana, blowing a kiss. The message, coffin's empty, Ev. Pay me $500,000, or I'll post the embalmer's confession. Starting with this. A photo loaded. Carl, drunk and grinning, holding a wax head with Michael's face. Time stopped. The fire roared. The 9-iron slipped from my hand. Another message, TikTok widow. I want my half. I threw the phone into the flames. It exploded in a burst of plastic and sparks. But the words were already in my bones. Game on, bitch. Chapter 2, The Devil in Dior. The diner was a relic from the 70s, a greasy spoon squatting on the edge of Route 9 like a bad habit. Neon flickered in the window, half the letters in Eat Dead, leaving just at. Fitting. I'd spent the last 48 hours oscillating between wanting to eat a bullet or a Xanax smoothie. Instead, I ordered coffee black bitter, the same shade as my mood, and slid into a cracked vinyl booth. The place reeked of burned bacon and regret. Perfect. Lana was late. Of course she was. She'd pick the time, the place, then make me marinate in dread. I stared at my reflection in the foggy window, the circles under my eyes like bruises. You look like hell, Michael used to sneer after a fight. No wonder I go elsewhere. I dug my nails into my palms until the memory bled away. The bell above the door jingled. She sauntered in like she owned the damn world, hips swinging under a snakeskin trench coat, blood-red stilettos clicking on linoleum. Every head turned. Men leaned back, tongues practically unrolling like red carpets. Lana thrived on it, the stares, the whispers, the power of being the sharpest blade in the room. She slid into the booth across from me, shedding the coat to reveal a silk camisole that cost more than my car. You look like hell, Evelyn. She smirked, lighting a cigarette despite the NO smoking sign sweating on the wall. Grief suits you. The waitress, a tired woman with a name tag reading Dottie, shuffled over. What'll it be, hon? Lana didn't glance up. Espresso. Triple shot. And a side of self-respect for my friend here. Dottie blinked, pen hovering. I waved her off. She's joking. Just the coffee. You're joking, Lana said as Dottie retreated. She blew smoke toward the ceiling. Skipping breakfast? TSK. Stress'll kill you faster than guilt. What do you want, Lana? Straight to business. Cute. She leaned forward, elbows on the table, cleavage a weapon. You know, Michael always said you were, what's the word? Transactional. The sound of his name in her mouth was a match to gasoline. Keep his name out of your throat. Or what? She grinned, wide and venomous. You'll stab me with a butter knife? Please. You couldn't even stab him, and God knows he deserved it. The truth sucker punched me. Michael had deserved it. Deserved worse. The night I found her lipstick, his shade, not mine, smudged on his collar, I'd held a kitchen knife to his throat while he slept. Watched his Adam's apple bob against the blade. But I'd let go. Always let go. Lana knew. She always knew where to twist. You think you're clever? I hissed. Blackmailing me with Carl's drunk confession? I'll ruin you. She laughed, loud and hollow. With what? Your fake tears and emptier bank account? The insurance company hasn't paid out yet, has it? She tapped her phone on the table, screen lighting up with a video, Carl sloshed and slurring in a dive bar, bragging about the wax dummy. Foolproof, he giggled. Even the widow's crying. Oscar worthy. My coffee curdled in my gut. You filmed him. And edited. And backed up. She tucked the phone away. But I've got time. And leverage. That funeral director? He's very chatty after a few tequilas. Likes to talk about all the other bodies he's swapped. Did you know he's been selling cadavers to med students? Fascinating guy. The diner walls closed in. I gripped my mug to keep from lunging across the table. What? Do? You? Want? She sipped her espresso, pinky raised like a parody of civility. 500,000, and a death of my own. I choked on air. What? Don't make me repeat myself, sweetheart. It's boring. She flicked a sugar packet at me. It hit my chest, fell into my lap. I've got a stalker. Ex-boyfriend. Psychotic little fucker named Vince. He's been camping outside my apartment sending me gifts. She slid her phone across again. A photo, a dead rat on a pillow, its belly slit open, stuffed with roses. Jesus, I muttered. Not even he can help me now. Vince thinks we're soulmates. Thinks if he can't have me, nobody can. She leaned in, voice dropping to a purr. I need him to believe I'm dead. And you. She tapped the sugar packet. You're gonna make it look real. The world tilted. You're insane. Says the woman who barbecued her husband's corpse. He's not. Dead. Please. She rolled her eyes. The crash was cute, but that Porsche didn't burn hot enough to ash a body. Not without help. You think I didn't smell the accelerant when I visited the wreck? Gasoline and desperation. Your signature scent. Dottie refilled my coffee, oblivious. I waited until she waddled off. Even if I wanted to help you, which I don't, faking a death isn't a DIY project. It takes money. Connections. Time. Which you have now. Lana's smile sharpened. Once that insurance payout hits, you'll be rolling in cash. And as for connections, she nodded toward the window. Outside, a rusty tow truck rumbled past, Carl's cremations and collision painted on the side. Your buddy's got a real entrepreneur spirit. The coffee turned to acid in my throat. Carl. The weasel who'd sold me out for a few extra shots of tequila. He's a liability. So is your freedom. She tossed a folded napkin at me. Inside, scribbled in lipstick, a list. Body double. Dental records. Closed casket. Fire. We'll need a Jane Doe. Someone nobody'll miss. Carl's got a guy at the morgue. Pay him whatever. Stage a car accident, burn it beyond recognition. Vince'll see the news, piss his pants, and vanish. And if he doesn't, she shrugged. Then I'll vanish. New name, new face. You'll foot the bill, naturally. Naturally. I crumpled the napkin. Why me? You could have gone to Carl directly. Because you're the artist, Evelyn. Her foot brushed mine under the table, a mockery of intimacy. Michael's death was almost elegant. If you'd ditched the wax dummy, maybe I wouldn't be here. But you got sloppy. Let me guess, ran out of cash? Couldn't afford a real cadaver? I flinched. She saw it. Oh, honey. She fake pouted. All that planning, and you cheaped out on the finale? The knife in my pocket, a steak knife I'd swiped on the way in, pressed against my thigh. I could stab her right here. Right in that smug, perfect throat. But her phone was on the table, thumb hovering over send. One tap, and the video went viral. I released the knife. You'll get your money. But after this, we're done. You breathe a word, I'll bury you myself. Lana clapped, slow and sarcastic. There's the spine Michael always said you lacked. She stood, slithering back into her coat. Meet me tonight. Midnight. Carl's crematorium. Bring cash and a stronger poker face. She dropped a $20 on the table. Breakfast is on me. You look famished. The bell jingled again. I sat there, shaking, until Dottie approached. Everything okay, hon? I forced a smile. Peachy. Outside, rain sheeted down, washing the parking lot into a blur. I stumbled to my car, Lana's espresso cup still steaming in my mind. In the glove box, a flask of vodka waited. I drank until the world softened at the edges. But the knife stayed in my pocket. Tonight, I thought, cranking the engine. Just get through tonight. The clock on the dash blinked. 10:17 a.m. 14 hours till showtime. 14 hours till I became a murderer again. Chapter 3. Blood and Blueprints. Midnight at Carl's crematorium smelled like burnt hair and bad decisions. The parking lot was a graveyard of broken-down hearses and oil stains, the flickering security light buzzing like a trapped wasp. I leaned against my car, gloved hands shoved into my coat pockets, breath fogging in the cold. Lana's Porsche purred into the lot, headlights off, her silhouette sharp as a switchblade behind the wheel. She stepped out in a white trench coat, white the audacity, and tossed me a duffel bag. It thudded at my feet, heavy with cash. You're late, I said. You're ugly. She popped a piece of gum, smirking. But here we are. Inside Carl's office was a back room cluttered with ash-filled urns and unmarked boxes. He sat at a dented metal desk, nursing a bottle of Jim Beam, his face greasy under the fluorescent lights. Ladies, he slurred, raising the bottle. Ready to play God? Lana slapped a stack of hundreds on the desk. We're here for the blueprints. And the body. Carl belched. Morgue's got a Jane Doe. Homeless. No ID. Corners on my payroll. He'll look the other way for $5,000. 10, I said. And he scrubs the records. Carl's eyes narrowed. You think you're in charge here? Lana leaned over him, her perfume choking the room. No. But I know you don't want the IRS auditing your little cadaver side hustle. $10,000. Now. He folded like wet cardboard. The morgue was a concrete bunker on the outskirts of town, its parking lot lit by a single flickering lamp. The coroner, a twitchy meth head named Roy, met us at the loading dock. She's in drawer 12, he whispered, eyes darting. Don't look at her face. Why? I snapped. Just don't. The drawer screeched open. The Jane Doe was maybe 30, her skin mottled with frost and neglect, hair matted like a storm cloud. A jagged scar ran from her collarbone to her ribs, a life story etched in flesh. Lana gagged, turning away. Jesus. Can't we get someone fresher? Roy shook his head. This is it. Take it or leave it. I stepped closer. The woman's lips were chapped, slightly parted, as if she'd died mid-sentence. What were you going to say? I wondered. Who misses you? Wrap her up, I said. Roy zipped the body into a black bag, the sound like a rattlesnake's warning. Lana tossed him the cash. Talk about this, and I'll make you a Jane Doe. He fled. The drive to the junkyard was a blur of shadows and static. Lana followed in her Porsche, high beams glaring in my rearview like accusing eyes. The Jane Doe lay in my trunk, a silent passenger. I cranked the radio. Some folks trust to reason, others trust to might. But the lyrics curdled in my throat, Michael's voice sneering from the back seat. You're really gonna do this, Ev? Burn some poor bitch to save your own ass. I swerved, tires screeching. Shut up. Shut up. Shut up. The junkyard was a kingdom of rust, guarded by a chain-link fence and a meth-addled Doberman. Carl's cousin, a toothless hillbilly named Cletus, waved us in. Y'all the ones torching the car? Got the stuff? Lana asked. He spat tobacco. Barrel of gas round back. Matches extra. The car was a gutted Buick, its seats slashed, windows smashed. Lana circled it, snapping photos for her stalker's scrapbook. Perfect. Trashy enough to be believable. We hauled the Jane Doe from the trunk, her body stiff and unwieldy. Lana grimaced. Fuck, she's heavy. You try dying homeless, I muttered. We stuffed the corpse into the driver's seat, strapped it in like a macabre puppet. Lana doused the interior with gasoline, the fumes searing my lungs. Smells like a NASCAR funeral, she joked, voice trembling. I didn't laugh. Cletus handed me the matches. Fire in the hole, ladies. The first match died in the wind. The second sparked, then caught. I held it, transfixed, the flame dancing in my pupils. Michael's hand around my wrist, the night I confronted him about Lana. You're crazy, he hissed. No one would believe you. I dropped the match. The Buick erupted, flames licking the sky, heat slamming into us like a fist. Lana hooped, filming the blaze, her face lit orange and grotesque. Look at that. Vince'll shit himself. But I couldn't look away from the body. The Jane Doe's hair caught first, a halo of fire, her skin bubbling like melted wax. A sound escaped her, a hiss, a sigh, the last gasp of air in her lungs. Or maybe I imagined it. Lana grabbed my arm. Come on. We need to go. But I stood there, sweating, shaking, the fire searing my retinas. Evelyn. She slapped me. I blinked. What? You're crying. I touched my cheek. What? It's the smoke. We didn't speak on the drive back. Lana's Porsche vanished into the night, taillights bleeding into the dark. I pulled over in a Walmart parking lot, vomited into a shopping cart, the acid burning my throat. My phone buzzed. A news alert. Fatal car fire in junkyard. Authorities investigate possible arson. I deleted it. Home was a hollow shell. I stripped, scrubbed my skin raw in the shower, but the smell clung, gasoline and guilt. In the mirror, the woman staring back was a stranger, eyes hollow, lips cracked. You botched the embalming, sweetheart. The voice wasn't Lana's. It was mine. Sleep didn't come. I paced, vodka in hand, the walls whispering. At 3 a.m., the doorbell rang. No one there. Just a package, a small box, no postage. Inside, a Polaroid, the Jane Doe's corpse burning. Scrawled on the back, nice try. My blood froze. The phone rang. Unknown number. I answered. Breathing. Then a laugh, deep, guttural, inhuman. Click. The sunrise was a bloody gash on the horizon. I sat on the porch, the Polaroid crumpled in my fist, Lana's words echoing. We're the same. Liars. Survivors. But survivors don't jump at shadows. They don't scream at dial tones. I lit the Polaroid on fire, watched the Jane Doe's face curl to ash. "I'm sorry," I whispered. The wind didn't answer. Chapter 4, The Ghost in the Machine. The insurance payout hit my account at 3:02 p.m. on a Tuesday. $2 million cold and digital. I stared at the screen in my bank's sterile lobby, the numbers blurring. Blood money, I thought. Bought and sold with a corpse and a lie. The teller smiled, oblivious. "Will there be anything else, Ms. Harper?" "Burn it," I wanted to say. Instead, I whispered, "No." Lana's cut was $500,000. I sent it through 3 offshore accounts, my fingers numb on the keyboard. She texted within seconds. "Kiss mark, you make murder look easy." I blocked her number. Burned the SIM card in the parking lot. Watched the smoke rise like a middle finger to the sky. But ghosts don't need phones. That night, her Instagram resurrected. At Gravedigger Barbie posted a black square with a caption. "Miss me?" Followers commented with heart emojis and "Queen of the Comeback." I knew better. I drank until the screen doubled, until my reflection in the laptop looked like her, smirking victorious. At midnight, the doorbell rang. No one there. Just another Polaroid taped to the peephole. The Jane Doe's body, charred and skeletal in the Buick's wreckage. Scrawled in red marker. "Liar." I tore it up. Flushed the pieces. Poured another drink. The shower was running when I got upstairs. I hadn't turned it on. Steam curled under the bathroom door. My hand shook on the knob. Michael's voice taunting. "Scared of a little hot water, Ev?" I kicked it open. Empty. Just fog on the mirror. 2 words smeared in the condensation. "Pay your debts." The vodka bottle slipped, shattered. I backed into the hall, glass crunching underfoot, and collided with something solid. Him. Vince. He stood in the shadows, gaunt as a cancer ward, eyes sunken and feral. A hunting knife glinted in his hand. "Where is she?" I froze. "Who?" He lunged, pinning me to the wall, blade at my throat. "Lana. You helped her disappear. Where is she?" Blood trickled warm down my neck. "She's dead. The car fire." "Bullshit." Spit flecked my face. I checked the teeth. Dental records don't lie. That wasn't her. Teeth. The Jane Doe's teeth. We'd forgotten to swap them. "I don't know what you're talking about," I choked. He pressed harder. "You're gonna take me to her. Now. Or I'll carve you into pieces, even the morticians can't fix." The knife trembled. "So did I. Okay. Okay. She's in a safe house. Montana. Address. I need to check my phone." He shoved me toward the bedroom. My mind raced. Lana's new identity. The cabin outside Missoula. The Glock she'd bragged about buying. I opened my nightstand drawer, pretending to scroll through contacts. My fingers closed around Michael's old revolver. "Hurry up," Vince snarled. I spun, firing blind. The shot tore through his shoulder. He howled, slashing wildly. The blade grazed my ribs as I stumbled back, tripping over the rug. He fled, blood spattering the hallway. I lay there, gasping, the gun smoking in my hand. The police came. Of course they did. I told them it was a break-in. A stranger. They took notes, shrugged, said, "Lock your doors." But I knew. This wasn't over. Lana called at dawn. Unknown number. I answered, rage burning through the fear. "You set me up. Vince came here. He knew. Ah, did Whittle Evie get a scare?" She crunched something. "Ice, maybe pills. Vince is a cockroach. You think a bullet's gonna stop him? Please. He's been shot 6 times. By me. He's your problem. Clean it up." "Oh, I will." Her voice dropped, venomous. "But you're gonna help. You owe me. I don't owe you shit." "Wrong. You owe me a body. A real one. Vince isn't buying the crispy critter we served him. So here's the new plan. You lure him somewhere quiet. I'll bring the tools. We make him vanish." The word hung between us, slick with implication. "No. Then I'll send Vince your address again. And next time, he'll bring friends." The line went dead. We met at the crematorium. Carl's cousin Cletus leered from the doorway, shotgun propped on his shoulder. "Y'all need a pig farmer? Disposal's extra." "We're good," Lana snapped, shoving past him. The back room was a slaughterhouse tableau. Plastic sheeting, a drain in the floor, a bone saw buzzing on a table. Lana hummed as she laid out tools, pliers, garbage bags, lie. "You've done this before," I said. "Only once." She tested the saw's blade. "College boyfriend. Wanted to get me pregnant. Oops." My stomach turned. "You're insane. And you're a hypocrite." She tossed me a pair of gloves. "You've already helped burn one body. What's another? This isn't the same. Isn't it?" She stepped closer, her breath sweet with mints and malice. You think that homeless bitch's life mattered less than yours? Than Michael's? Newsflash, princess, we're all meat. Some of us just rot slower. The door banged open. Vince staggered in, clutching his bandaged shoulder. Lana, I knew you weren't dead, you fucking. She shot him. Not in the shoulder. Not in the leg. Straight through the left eye. He dropped. Lana blew smoke from the barrel. Told you I'd handle it. Cletus appeared, grinning. I'll bag him. Wait. Lana crouched, prying Vince's jaw open. We need the teeth. For dental records. The pliers gleamed. I didn't stay to watch. Drove to the river, parked under a bridge, and screamed until my throat bled. When the shakes subsided, I checked my reflection. Something moved in the back seat. The Jane Doe stared back, her face melted, lips sewn shut with fishing line. I slammed the gas. Home was a crime scene. Again. Lana waited on my porch, swinging Vince's dog tags like a pendulum. You missed the fun part. Cletus has a wood chipper. Very efficient. Get out. Ah! She dangled a USB drive. Security footage. You're in it. Pulling the trigger. Such a bad look. I lunged. She sidestepped, laughing. Careful. I dropped this, it auto-uploads to the cloud. What do you want? Same as always. Everything. She pocketed the drive. But for now, a drink. And your undivided attention. Inside, she poured my vodka into a crystal tumbler, kicked off her heels, and flopped onto the couch. You ever wonder why Michael picked me? Because you're a sociopath. Because I asked. She swirled the ice. I wanted his money. His house. His life. But you? You just wanted his love. She snorted. Pathetic. The gun was still in my waistband. I fingered the trigger. Go ahead. She spread her arms. Do it. But remember, kill me and the world sees you. Really sees you. Not the poor little widow. The butcher. I didn't move. That's what I thought. She stood, stretching. We're stuck with each other, Ev. Till death do us part. The front door closed. I sank to the floor, Vince's blood still crusted under my nails. On the coffee table, Lana had left a parting gift. Vince's severed finger, wedding ring glinting. A warning. A promise. A noose tightening. That night I dreamt of teeth. They rained from the ceiling, clattering on the floor, biting my ankles. The Jane Doe crawled from the fireplace, jaw unhinged, whispering with Lana's voice. You're one of us now. I woke choking. The USB drive was on my pillow. And the ghost? She never left. Chapter 5, Knives and Nightmares. The USB drive sat on my nightstand like a live grenade. I'd tried to destroy it, doused it in gasoline, smashed it with a hammer, even microwaved it until the kitchen smelled like melted plastic. But Lana had backups. Always backups. She'd texted me a screenshot of the cloud upload at 3 a.m. Sleep tight, killer. Skull and crossbones. I didn't sleep. Instead, I drove to the junkyard at dawn, Vince's blood still flecked on my dashboard. Cletus was there, hosing down the wood chipper, red water pooling at his boots. He grinned, toothless and grotesque. Y'all want another go? Got a 2-for-1 special this week. Where's the rest of him? I demanded. Bait! He jerked a thumb toward the river. Catfish gotta eat too. I tossed him a wad of cash. Burn it. All of it. He pocketed the money, spat. Ain't enough. It's never enough, I muttered, climbing back into my car. The rearview mirror caught my reflection, pale, cracked lips, eyes like shattered glass. Michael's voice, laughing. You look like hell, Ev. Who's gonna miss you when you're gone? I swerved into a gas station, bought a bottle of vodka and a box of matches. The clerk didn't look up. Lana was waiting in my living room. She'd let herself in, her legs draped over the arm of my couch, painting her nails a venomous red. The gun I'd hidden under the coffee table lay disassembled in front of her. You really need better security, she said, blowing on her fingertips. I could have been a serial killer. You are a serial killer. Alleged. She grinned. Now sit. We need to talk about your little cleanup job. I stayed standing. We're done. Vince is gone. You got your money. Correction, you got your money. I got crumbs. She stood, circling me like a shark. Turns out, faking your death is expensive. New IDs, surgeons, a villa in Belize. I need another million. I barked a laugh. Go rob a bank. She backhanded me. Hard. The room spun. I tasted blood. Michael's ghost, cheering from the corner. Atta girl, Lana. You don't get to say no, she hissed. Not after you fucked up Vince's teeth. Not after you made me pull the trigger. She grabbed my hair, wrenching my head back. You owe me. I spat in her face. She let go, wiping her cheek slowly. Cute. But we're past threats, Evelyn. You're going to help me drain that insurance fund dry. And if you refuse... She pulled out her phone, played a voicemail. This is Detective Ruiz with the Metro PD. We'd like to ask you a few questions about a recent fire. The walls closed in. You called them? Not yet. But imagine if I did. Imagine them finding Vince's DNA in your shower drain. His finger in your couch cushions. She'd sked. Sloppy. I lunged for the gun parts. She kicked them away, pinning me to the floor, her knee digging into my spine. Here's the plan, she breathed. You wire me the money. Tonight. Then you disappear. Fake your death. Leave me the rest. Or, she leaned down, lips brushing my ear. Or I'll carve you up myself. Feed you to Cletus pigs. And when the cops come, I'll cry pretty for the cameras. Poor Evelyn. Always so unstable. She left then, taking the gun's firing pin with her. The vodka didn't help. Neither did the pills. I crawled into the bathtub, fully clothed, and let the shower scald me. The steam fogged the mirror, but the words still came. Pay your debts. Scrawled in my own lipstick. I screamed, smashing the glass with my fist. Shards sliced my knuckles, blood swirling pink down the drain. Whose blood? Mine. Vince's? The Jane Doe's? My phone buzzed. A new DM from at Gravedigger Barbie. A video of me dragging the Jane Doe's body into the Buick. Caption. Going viral in 3, 2. I called her. Stop. Money first. I need time. You've got till sunrise. The line went dead. The bank manager met me at 11 p.m., his office lit by a single desk lamp. Another wire transfer, Ms. Harper? To the same Cayman account. Yes. He frowned at the amount. This will nearly drain your funds. I'm aware. He hesitated. May I ask, is everything all right? No. I'm being blackmailed by a psychopath. I helped burn a woman alive. There's a finger in my couch. I smiled. Vacation home. The money vanished into the digital void. Lana texted instantly. Kissmark, pack your bags, partner. Next stop, hell. I drove to the crematorium one last time. Carl was passed out at his desk, empty bottles littering the floor. I took his keys, found the incinerator, and cranked it to max. The USB drive went in first. Then Michael's wedding ring. Then every photo, every document, every shred of evidence that I'd ever existed. The flames roared, hungry and righteous. But fire can't kill ghosts. Lana's laugh echoed in the smoke. Home was a shell. I packed a duffel bag, cash, passports, a knife, but froze at the door. The Jane Doe's face in the mirror. Vince's finger in the couch. Lana's perfume clinging to the walls. I couldn't run. So I'd fight. She came at 4 a.m., expecting a corpse. Instead, she found me waiting in the dark, knife in hand. You're late, I said. She froze. Where's the money? Gone. She drew her gun. Then so are you. I lunged. The blade sank into her thigh. She screamed, firing wild. The bullet shattered a lamp. We crashed into the hall, clawing, biting, a tangle of teeth and nails. She kneed my ribs. I headbutt her nose. Blood sprayed. You bitch, she gasped. Learned from the best. The gun skidded away. We scrambled for it. Her fingers brushed the grip. Mine closed around the fireplace poker. I swung. The crack echoed like a gunshot. She dropped. I stood over her, panting, the poker raised. Game over. She laughed, blood bubbling on her lips. You won't do it. Michael's voice whispering. She's right. You're weak. The poker trembled. Then, sirens. Red and blue lights flooded the room. Lana grinned. Called them before I came, partner. The door burst open. I dropped the poker. They cuffed me in the kitchen. Detective Ruiz, mid-40s, tired eyes, a wedding band he kept spinning, read me my rights. Lana played victim on the gurney, sobbing. She tried to kill me. She killed her husband. She killed Vince. Ruiz eyed me. That true? I said nothing. He found the USB drive's ashes in the incinerator. The Jane Doe's dental records. Vince's ring. You're coming downtown, he said. Lana winked as they loaded her into the ambulance. The holding cell reeked of piss and defeat. I sat on the bench, picking blood from my nails. Ruiz slid a photo under the bars. The Jane Doe pre-fire. Who is she? No one. Everyone's someone. I met his gaze. Not anymore. He left. The ghost in the mirror smiled. You're one of us now. They let me go at dawn. No charges. Not yet. Lana's text buzzed as I stepped into the light. Next time, aim for the skull. I deleted it. But the knife stayed in my pocket. Chapter 6, Closure in Flames. The cops let me go at dawn, but freedom tasted like ash. Detective Ruiz's parting words clung to me like a curse, We're watching you. The station's fluorescence had bleached my vision, leaving ghostly halos around every street lamp as I stumbled into the parking lot. Lana's Porsche idled across the street, exhaust curling into the frigid air like a beckoning finger. She leaned against the hood, sipping a latte, her face a mask of bruises and triumph. "Rough night, partner?" she called, tossing the cup into the gutter. I didn't flinch. The knife in my pocket felt heavier than regret. "You set me up. And you walked right into it." She grinned, split lip oozing. "But hey, look at the bright side. Now we're even. Even." The word ignited something feral in my chest. I lunged, slamming her against the car, blade pressed to her throat. "I should get you right here." She didn't struggle. Just laughed, the vibration humming through the steel. "Do it. But remember, kill me and every Dropbox I've got dumps your secrets to the press, the cops, your dry cleaner. You'll never sleep again." The blade trembled. Her pulse thrummed against it, steady as a metronome. "We're not done, Ev," she whispered. "You owe me one last ride." She wanted a body. A real one. Not some homeless junkie, she spat as we sped toward the funeral home. Someone with skin in the game. The USB drive's contents glowed on her laptop between us. Security footage of Ruiz interviewing the coroner, the Jane Doe's autopsy report, a spreadsheet of Carl's cadaver sales. "Your get-out-of-jail-free card," she said. "We hand this to Ruiz, he'll drop the investigation. But first," she patted the duffel bag at her feet, "we need a sacrifice." I didn't ask who. I already knew. Carl's crematorium loomed ahead, its sign dangling by one bolt. Car. Screations and collision. The L had burned out long ago. Inside, Carl was waiting, wrists duct taped to a folding chair, his face a swollen mess. Lana had beaten him to the punch. Literally. "Ladies," he slurred through broken teeth. "Let's talk about this." Lana silenced him with a stapler to the temple. "You talk too much." She unzipped the duffel, revealing a bone saw, garbage bags, and a jug of lye. "Time to clean house." I froze. This wasn't the deal. The deal changed. She tossed me the saw. "Cut him up. We'll burn the pieces. Ruiz finds his DNA in the incinerator, case closed." Carl's eyes bulged. "Evelyn, please." Michael's voice snarling. "Do it. He's just another cockroach." The saw buzzed to life in my hands. We worked in silence. Carl's screams didn't last. The saw did. Lana hummed, "Ring around the rosy," as she bagged the chunks. I focused on the mechanical rhythm, cut, bag, repeat, until my arms were slick to the elbows. "See," Lana said, sealing the last bag. "Cathartic, right?" I vomited into the drain. She lit a cigarette off the incinerator's pilot light. "Now for the fun part." The flames roared to life, hungry and howling. We fed Carl piece by piece, the heat blistering our skin. Lana danced in the orange glow, her shadow a twisted puppet on the wall. "Feels like old times, but the old times were dead. So was I." The USB drive bought our silence. Ruiz closed the case, his tired eyes lingering on mine. "Don't leave town." Lana threw a party to celebrate. Her penthouse dripped with orchids and arrogance, every surface polished enough to see your sins reflected. She floated through the crowd in a backless red gown, champagne in one hand, a .380 in the other. "To fresh starts," she toasted, firing into the ceiling. I slipped cyanide into her glass. She caught me. "Naughty," she purred, pressing the gun to my ribs. "Let's take this outside." The rooftop pool glowed neon, the city sprawled below like a circuit board. Lana kicked off her heels, dipped her toes in the water. "You ever think about jumping?" "Every day." She laughed. "Me too. But where's the fun in that?" She spun, arms wide. "We're gods, Ev. We decide who lives, who dies." "We're ghosts," I snapped. "And we're running out of time." She stilled. "Then let's make it count." The kiss was violent, all teeth and spite, her fingers tangling in my hair. We fell into the pool, the water swallowing the gunshot as her bullet tore through my shoulder. I clawed at her gown, her skin, dragging us both under. We sank, entwined, the world reduced to bubbles and blood. "This is how it ends," I thought. Not with a bang. A whimper. But Lana always had to win. She shoved me off, surfacing with a gasp. I followed, choking, the pool's edge miles away. "Still breathing," she rasped. "Unfortunately." We clung to the ledge, the city's heartbeat pulsing below. "I'm leaving," I said. "Tonight. You'll come back." "I'd rather die." She smiled. "Same thing." The funeral home was where it began. I stood in the chapel, Michael's empty coffin before me, a gallon of gasoline in hand. The walls whispered our lies, the floor sticky with sacramental wine and regret. Lana found me there, of course. Nostalgic. She trailed a finger through the dust on the pews. Just cleaning up. She saw the gas can. Dramatic. Poetic. We faced each other in the aisle, two shadows in a house of ghosts. It didn't have to be like this, she said. Yes, it did. She drew her gun. I struck a match. The flames leapt faster than her bullet. Fire's a funny thing. It doesn't care about motives or apologies. It devours. We devoured each other. The coffin burned first, the wax dummy melting into a scream. Lana's gown caught as she lunged, our bodies crashing through the floor into the basement. She screamed, beating at the flames, but the gasoline had done its work. You crazy bitch, she shrieked, clawing at my face. You made me. I roared back. We rolled through the inferno, skin blistering, hair singed to ash. The world narrowed to heat and hate. Sirens wailed in the distance. Lana's gun lay buried in embers. My knife glowed red hot. Together, she coughed, blood flecking her lips. Never. I plunged the knife into her chest. She laughed. Laughed. See you in hell. Her body went slack. The ceiling collapsed. They pulled me out alive. Barely. Third degree burns. Cracked ribs. A lung full of smoke. Lana wasn't so lucky. The papers called her a victim. A tragedy. They buried her in a closed casket, the same one she'd mocked me in. I watched from a wheelchair, face bandaged, as they lowered her into the ground. Detective Ruiz stood beside me, handcuffs at the ready. You'll stand trial, he said. I know. He didn't ask why. Some things even fire can't explain. They gave me 30 years. Lana haunts me still, in the prison yard, in the shower stalls, in the creak of my cot at night. Sometimes I hear her laugh, smell her perfume, feel her breath on my neck. You're one of us now. Maybe I always was. The money's gone. The scars aren't. But hey, at least the coffin's full now. Chapter 7. Ashes to Ashes. Prison smells like industrial bleach, and the slow rot of hope. They gave me a top bunk in a cell barely big enough to piss in, my burns still raw under the scratchy state-issued uniform. The first night, I pressed my face into the thin pillow and inhaled the ghost of Lana's perfume, jasmine and gun smoke, lingering like a promise. You're one of us now, she'd hissed in my ear as they led me out of the courthouse. 30 years. I marked days by the screams. The 3 a.m. lockdowns when someone OD'd. The clang of metal trays in the chow hall. The way the fluorescent lights buzzed like flies over roadkill. My cellmate, a wiry meth head named Raylene with spiderweb tattoos clawing up her neck, called me crispy and stole my toilet paper. I let her. Fighting meant the hole, and the hole meant darkness, and darkness meant her, Lana, flickering in the corners, her charred fingers trailing over my scars. Miss me. I didn't sleep. The warden, a bulldog-faced woman with a voice like gravel, summoned me after a month. Her office reeked of stale coffee and contempt. Harper. You've got a visitor. Ruiz, I thought. Here to gloat. But it wasn't Ruiz. The man in the visitor's booth wore a tailored suit, and a smile that didn't touch his eyes. Mason Cole. The nameplate on his briefcase gleamed under the flickering lights. He pressed a manicured hand to the glass. Ms. Harper. A pleasure. I didn't sit. Who the fuck are you? An admirer. He slid a business card through the slot. Cole and Associates. No title. No address. I represent interested parties. People who'd pay handsomely for your talents. I laughed, the sound rusty. I'm fresh out of talents. On the contrary. He leaned closer, voice dropping. Your work with Lana Voss was inspired. Faking deaths, manipulating evidence, a rare skill set. The air thinned. Lana's ghost hissing. Told you we weren't done. Get to the point. A client needs someone disappeared. Permanently. We'll handle the logistics. You handle the artistry. He tapped the glass. Do this and we'll make your sentence vanish. I stared at the card. Why me? Because you're already a ghost. Raylene cornered me in the showers that night, her shiv, a toothbrush filed to a needle point, pressed to my ribs. Heard you got friends on the outside, Crispy. Steam curled around us, hiding her face. Back off. She dug the shiv deeper. My girl's in Max for slitting her PO's throat. You get your rich boyfriend to spring her, or I'll carve my name into your other cheek. I broke her wrist against the tile. The guards came running, but not before I whispered in her ear. Touch me again, and I'll burn you alive. They threw me in solitary. The hole was a concrete coffin. No light. No sound. Just the drip of water and the weight of my own breath. Lana thrived here. She danced in the dark, her skin peeling like old wallpaper, lips brushing my ear. You're losing it, Ev. Just like Michael. Fuck you, I snarled. Too late. They let me out after a week. Raylene's bed was empty. Transferred, the guard said, avoiding my eyes. Cole visited again. Change your mind. I took the card. The mark was a state senator's wife. Caroline Whitmore. Blonde. 42. A pill problem and a pool boy on the side. Cole's client wanted her gone before the election. Stage an overdose, Cole said, sliding a dossier through the slot. The boy's already on payroll. Your job is to make it believable. I memorized the details. Caroline's allergies. Her therapist's notes. The exact shade of her lipstick. I need a body. We'll provide one. Of course they would. They moved me to a work detail in the prison morgue. The coroner, a skeletal man named Fletcher, didn't ask questions. Sign here, he'd mutter, handing me clipboards for corpses. The Jane Doe arrived on a Thursday. Late teens. Overdose. Hair dyed Caroline's honey blonde. I did the work. Swabbed her mouth with Caroline's toothbrush. Planted the pills. Stitched her lips into a perfect replica of the senator's wife's pout. Fletcher whistled. You're good. Was, I said. Cole smuggled in a burner phone. The news broke Sunday morning. Senator's wife found dead in hotel room. Tragic overdose. He visited at lunch, grinning. Clients thrilled. You're halfway to freedom. Who's next? He slid another dossier. A CEO. A whistleblower. A problem. I took it. Lana's ghost hated the morgue. You're their puppet now, she sneered, perched on a stainless steel table. Pathetic. Better than rotting here. You'll rot either way. I ignored her. Ignored the way the corpses sometimes whispered. Ignored the guard's sudden politeness. Power is a currency, even in hell. Raylene came back in September. Shackled, face bruised, eyes hollow. They shoved her into the cell across from mine. She didn't look at me. At lights out, she hissed through the bars. You did this. I smiled. You shouldn't have threatened me. Cole's reach was longer than I'd guessed. The warden called me in again. Cole's doing. Medical parole, she said, spitting the words. Effective immediately. Bullshit, I said. She slid the paperwork across the desk. Stage 4 lung cancer. 6 months to live. I'd never smoked a day in my life. Cole waited outside the gates in a black town car. Welcome back. The sky was too wide. Too bright. Who's next? I asked. He lit a cigar. Someone who deserves it. The safe house was a penthouse overlooking the river. Silk sheets. Minibar. A closet full of designer black. Lana's ghost lounged on the bed, peeling the skin from her fingers. You sold your soul, Ev. Again. I poured a drink. What's left of it? The dossier glowed on the nightstand. Detective Emilio Ruiz. Cole's voice on the burner. He's digging too deep. Handle it. I traced Ruiz's face in the photo. His tired eyes. His wedding band. You're one of us now, Lana whispered. The gun felt heavier than guilt. But I'd made my choice. Ruiz answered on the first knock. Harper. He looked older. Thinner. The house behind him smelled of takeout and loneliness. I'm sorry, I said. He reached for his holster. I pulled the trigger. The body hit the floor. Lana clapped. Bravo. Cole's men cleaned up. I stood in the shower until the water ran cold. Was it worth it? Lana asked. I didn't answer. They gave me a new name. A new face. A villa in Costa Rica. But the ghosts followed. Always. The last dossier arrived in a black envelope. Mason Cole. His photo smiled up at me. I lit a match. Game on, Lana purred. The fire felt like home. Chapter 8, The Last Dance. The villa's decay mirrored my body, crumbling, hollow, infested with things that fed on rot. I woke to the taste of blood, metallic and warm, pooling under my tongue. The cancer had started hosting midnight parties in my lungs, each cough a fireworks display of agony. Lana sat at the foot of the bed, peeling strips of charred skin from her arms and flicking them into a pile on the floor. Rise and shine, sleeping beauty, she crooned. Big day today. I dragged myself to the cracked bathroom mirror. The woman staring back was a stranger, gaunt cheeks, yellowed eyes, hair falling out in clumps. The scars from the fire, thick ropes of melted flesh down my neck and arms, glowed angry red in the morning light. I splashed tepid water on my face, but the stains wouldn't wash off. Not the blood. Not the guilt. Cole's burner phone buzzed on the sink. A new message from Client 9. Terminate the accountant. 48 hours. Attached was a dossier on some Wall Street ghoul named Arthur Crane. Tax evasion. Offshore accounts. 2 daughters in Greenwich. I memorized the details, then burned the file in the sink. The flames licked at the porcelain, hungry and fleeting. You're slipping, Lana said, materializing behind me. Used to be faster. Sharper. Used to give a shit. She traced a burnt finger down my spine. Liar. You still care. That's why it hurts. I slammed the bathroom door. Her laughter seeped through the wood. The hit was supposed to be simple. Poison in his single malt scotch. A tragic end to a tragic life. But Arthur Crane didn't drink. He sat in his corner office, 60th floor, all glass and steel and arrogance. Who the hell are you? Auditor, I said, flashing Cole's forged credentials. IRS flagged some discrepancies. He didn't blink. Call my lawyer. I lunged, syringe in hand. He blocked, a black belt reflex, and drove his elbow into my ribs. The cancer screamed. I stumbled, crashing into a shelving unit. Awards shattered. A framed photo of his daughters exploded on the floor. Pathetic, Lana hissed, leaning against the window. You're dying faster than he is. Crane grabbed a letter opener. You're not IRS. No, I wheezed. I'm karma. The fight was ugly. Desperate. He slashed my thigh. I jabbed the syringe into his neck. He spasmed, clawing at his throat, and toppled through the floor-to-ceiling window. The glass held. His skull didn't. I limped to the elevator, trailing blood and whispers. Cole's men were waiting in the parking garage. Two of them, lean and shark-eyed, leaning against a black SUV. Client 9 sends regards, one said, flicking a cigarette. I palmed the knife in my coat. Tell them to fuck off. They charged. The first got the blade in his gut. The second pinned me against a concrete pillar, his breath reeking of nicotine and mint. Cole said you'd fight. Cole's dead. His fist cracked my jaw. Not dead enough. I headbutted him, felt his nose crumple. He staggered, and I drove the knife up under his ribs, twisting until he gurgled. Lana clapped from the shadows. Bravo. Now run. The van was where I'd left it, engine still warm. I sped through the city, sirens wailing in the distance. Back at the villa, I stitched my leg with vodka and fishing line. The wound wept. The cancer cheered. Lana straddled Cole's revolver on the kitchen counter. You're running out of time, Ev. They'll keep coming. Let them. Or, she purred, burn it all down. Take them with you. The idea took root. Ugly. Inevitable. That night, I dreamt of the prison morgue. Raylene lay on the slab, spiderweb tattoos pulsing like live wires. You did this, she hissed. I'm sorry, I said. Sorry doesn't unrape me. Sorry doesn't. Fletcher the coroner stepped out of the shadows, bone saw buzzing. Sign here. I woke screaming. Cole's laptop glowed in the dark. Passwords cracked, files exposed, a spiderweb of shell companies, bribes, bodies buried in shallow graves. Client 9 wasn't a person. It was a consortium. Politicians. CEOs. A cartel lieutenant. Lana peered over my shoulder. TikTok. They'll smell the blood soon. I compiled the files. Encrypted. Uploaded to every news outlet, police server, dark web forum. You'll need a distraction, Lana said. I smiled. Already have one. The mesa at dawn was a tombstone. Wind howled through the cracks, carrying voices. Michael. Ruiz. Carl. I parked the van at the base, Cole's arsenal in the back, gasoline C4, a dozen Molotovs. Lana materialized beside me, her burns glowing in the half-light. This where you die. This where I live. She laughed. Same thing. I hiked to the summit, the cancer gnawing, the ghosts whispering. The city sprawled below, oblivious. You're one of us now, Lana said. Always was. I lit the fuse. The explosion tore the sky. Flames devoured the van, the arsenal, the evidence. The mesa trembled. Below, sirens wailed as the files hit the web. Lana danced in the inferno, her laughter crackling. Now this is a finale. I sat cross-legged in the dirt, Cole's revolver in my lap. The fire roared closer. Scared, she asked. Done. The first bullet was for Cole. The second for Ruiz. The third. Lana caught my wrist. Don't. Let them find you. Let them see. The flames kissed my skin. Let them burn. They came at sunset. Black SUVs. Men in suits. Client 9. I stood at the mesa's edge, the revolver empty, the wind tugging at my clothes. Harper, one shouted. It's over. I spread my arms. Just started. Behind them, the horizon bled red. Lana took my hand. Dance with me. We stepped into the fire. The last thing I heard wasn't screams. It was laughter. Mine. Chapter 9, The Ghosts We Became. The villa in Costa Rica rotted around me. Salt air peeled the paint from the walls. Geckos skittered over cracked tiles. The ocean roared like a drunk neighbor day and night, until I forgot what silence sounded like. Cole's men stopped coming after I burned his dossier. The money ran out. The ghosts moved in. Lana preferred the balcony. She'd drape herself over the rusted railing, charred legs swinging, singing off-key corridos about betrayal and bad men. "You should have killed me slower, Ev," she'd croon. "We could have been legends." I drank to drown her out. Tequila, mostly. Sometimes bleach when the liquor store was closed. It never stuck. The cancer did. Cole's parting gift, a slow, spiteful death wrapped in a medical parole lie. The tumors gnawed my lungs like termites, turning every breath into a wheezing rattle. I coughed blood into the sink, watched it spiral down the drain with the rest of my regrets. "Poetic," Lana said, perched on the toilet. "Burn the world, end up ashes. Fuck off. Make me." I hurled the tequila bottle. It shattered against the wall, glass raining into the tub. She laughed, flickering like static. The knock came at midnight. 3 raps, sharp and sure. Cole stood on the porch, his suit rumpled, eyes bloodshot. A revolver hung loose in his hand. "You shouldn't have run." I leaned against the doorframe, the knife behind my back slick with sweat. "You shouldn't have come." He raised the gun. "Client wants closure. Your head in a box." "Which one?" "All of them." The first shot tore through my shoulder. The second missed, splintering the door jamb. I lunged, knife slicing upward. The blade caught his throat, a red smile blooming under his chin. He gurgled, clawing at the wound. "Bitch! Takes one." His body slumped into the ferns. Lana applauded from the roof. "Encore!" I dragged Cole inside, his blood painting a trail to the kitchen. The cancer howled, but I'd learned to feed it pain. "One last job." His phone buzzed. A text from Client 9. "Status?" I typed, "Done. Send cleanup." They arrived at dawn, 2 brutes in a black van. I greeted them with Cole's gun. "Wrong house." They didn't laugh. The fight was short. Ugly. One died with a blender to the skull. The other fled, clutching his guts. I sat on the porch, smoking Cole's cigars, watching the sun rise over a corpse-littered lawn. "You're slipping," Lana said, materializing in the rocking chair. "Used to be cleaner. Used to care." She flicked ash into the wind. "What now?" I coughed, red speckling my palm. "Now I die. Boring." The lawyer found me a week later. A kid in a cheap suit, sweating through his cologne. "Ms. Harper? I'm here to execute Mason Cole's will." "Burn it." He flinched. "There's a beneficiary. A prison account. For Raylene Cobb." The name hit like a shiv. "Raylene. My cellmate. The one I'd doomed to Max." "Why?" The lawyer slid over a photo. Raylene, shackled and hollow-eyed, staring at the camera like it owed her money. On the back, Cole's handwriting. "You owe her." Lana peered over my shoulder. "Oh, this'll be fun." San Quentin's visiting room hadn't changed. Same plastic chairs. Same burnt coffee. Same eyes tracking my scars. Raylene shuffled in, chains clanking. She'd aged a decade in 2 years. The spiderweb tattoos on her neck now stretched to her cheeks, swallowing her face. "Crispy." She sneered. "Come to gloat." I pushed the paperwork across the table. "Medical parole. Cole's last fuck you." She didn't touch it. "Why?" "I owed you." "Bullshit." "You were right." I met her glare. "I did this to you." She laughed, sharp and broken. "You think a get-out-of-jail card fixes it? I got raped in there. Beaten. You think parole scrubs that off?" "No," I stood. "But revenge helps." I left her the gun taped under the table. The highway bled into desert. I drove Cole's stolen van until the engine smoked, then walked. The sun blistered my back. The cancer feasted. Lana kept pace, her steps silent in the sand. "Where we going, Ev?" "Nowhere." "Perfect." We climbed a mesa as the sky bruised purple. The wind carried voices, Michael's sneer, Carl's pleas, Ruiz's last gasp. I lay back, staring at the stars, the pain fading to a dull hum. Lana stretched beside me, her burns glowing in the moonlight. "Remember the fire? The way it felt. Like freedom. Let's do it again." She flicked a match. The mesa bloomed orange, the flames dancing hot and hungry. We didn't move. "You're one of us now," she whispered. "Always was." The smoke swallowed the stars. They found the van. The bodies. The will. Raylene's parole made headlines. Ex-convict inherits millions, philanthropy or payback? She bought an island. A yacht. An army of lawyers. She never mentioned me. The mesa's ashes scattered, unnamed bones buried in the sand. No funeral. No epitaph. Just the wind, howling a widow's name. Lana was wrong. Ghosts don't last forever. But fire? Fire always wins.